Last night, after the Super Bowl ended, CBS presented the first installment of its sequel to Survivor, last season's smash hit series. Its regular spot will be Thursdays, opposite NBC's sitcom Friends. TV critic David Bianculli has this review.
Was CBS smart to schedule Survivor after Super Bowl 35? Let me answer that question by asking another. This morning, at the office or at home, what were you talking about the most? Was it that thrilling final quarter of Super Bowl 35? Or all those spectacular commercials, most of which faded from memory as soon as they faded to black? Or was it Survivor the Australian Outback, with its granite waterfall, its vomit bags, and its bug-infested figs? That's what I thought. Any doubts about whether this new Survivor would match its South Seas predecessor in terms of personality conflicts and breathtaking scenery were erased almost instantly. Last time, the show's premise, the rules, and the true strategic importance of the immunity challenges were brand new. This time, the audience, like the more buff contestants this time around, know exactly what to expect and what is at stake. It's still 16 people competing and scheming to be the last one playing the game and grab that million-dollar prize. It still begins with the contestants divided into two tribes of eight, competing against one another for goodies, like waterproof matches, and for immunity, which means the other tribe has to throw someone out of the outback. In this new Survivor series, the two tribes are called the Kucha and the Okagor. The Okagor won the challenge last night, but the Kucha had all the best TV moments. Jeff got sick and threw up early, just like Ramona had in the original Survivor. Last time, Rudy, Rich, and Bebe were the most irritating people out of the gate. In Australia, the early irritants were all Kuchas. There was Mike, the pushy leader when it came to building a shelter. And Deb, an equally vocal corrections officer who was the first to be voted off, making her this year's Sonia. And finally, there was Kimmy, the loudest and most abrasive person caught by the Survivor night vision cameras the tribe's first evening in their cramped little shelter. The next morning, Deb and Jeff had something to say about her.
You gotta share something about yourself that's really embarrassing.
Okay.
Embarrassing?
I just got naked in a tent with a bunch of strangers.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
Give us the dirt,
Ex boyfriend, husband, wife.
Okay, you know, A, girlfriend. Not married. Don't believe in marriage until I'm 35.
Okay, don't say you're a virgin because I swear to God, I'll
people talking about the floor. My main concern was where the hell am I going to masturbate out here?
That's the bad thing.
You've got to be kidding me.
Kimmy is a happy-go-lucky person who's got, I don't even know how to describe her. I don't know what the right word is. You know, nothing is taboo with her. Nothing at all.
Listen to me. You guys might like a skin wig, however, on occasion.
Kimmy will not shut up. You know, I'm tired at night. I want to go to sleep, and they're constantly talking. And with the headache that I have, it just reverberates. Kimmy cannot say a single thing without screaming it. All of a sudden, out of the blue, with that accent, it just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks. I just want to grab her by the neck and shake the out of her, you know?
Oh, my God, I love you!
Host Jeff Probst, handling the first tribal council, seemed to be having fun from the start, even if the contestants didn't. As for the scenery this time, it was beautiful. The overwhelmingly clear night sky, the granite waterfall on which the tribal councils are held, and the riverside camp settings are all major pluses. Last night's premiere even had one of those wonderful Survivor surprises. A bite into a wild fig resulted in the discovery not of an exotic Australian delicacy, but of a fruit fully infested with tiny bugs. This Survivor, like the last one, is shaped and presented like a true mystery story. It's the production values, editing, and character development that make it so appealing. It also promises an ultimate, finite conclusion, making it very unusual in TV dramatic terms. Survivor, in a way, is the modern equivalent of those sweeping miniseries we used to flock to 20 and 25 years ago. We end up caring about these characters, but not all of them make it to the end. And unlike weekly TV dramas that seem to go on forever, there is an end to Survivor. In terms of network competition, though, this is only the beginning. In 3 days, Survivor goes up against Friends, and NBC is taking that threat so seriously that the network is countering by adding 10 minutes to Friends, at least for the first few weeks, and presenting special live mini-installments of Saturday Night Live. The Friends expansion, that's no big deal. If NBC had a better comedy than The Weber Show after Friends, it'd probably stand pat. The Saturday Night Live move is much smarter. It'll promote the late-night show in primetime and, like Survivor, offer something that people are likely to talk about the next morning. But what Survivor has, as its whole card, is momentum. Each show becomes more dramatic and more important as the contestant pool is pared down. Last season, the audience levels kept growing, and the climax of the South Seas Survivor was one of last season's most popular TV programs, second only to the Super Bowl. Now answer these last two questions as quickly as you can. Number one, who won last year's Super Bowl? Time's up. Now here's question number two. Who won last year's Survivor? I rest my case. Trust me, folks, no matter what NBC or any other network throws against it, Survivor isn't going anywhere for a while.
David Bianculli is TV critic for the New York Daily News.